Dang, and welcome to Too Much Scrolling for August 12th, 2014. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Essenfly.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you want more information, you should ask your teachers, kids. Your teachers are there. You're going back to school. You can ask them anything.
I think they're always right.
Teachers are always right.
I think so.
Because I said so.
Oh, because Fodor said so.
So therefore, it must be true.
Never, never, never question a teacher.
That's right.
There's your first words of wisdom.
There you go. Get back on the bus, kids. Never question your teachers. You know what kids like, Chip?
What do they enjoy?
Kids love cartoons.
They do love cartoons.
Our movie of the week, our film at 11 this week, is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. For 2014, a new batch of mutants have hatched. They are kicking ass and taking names.
And probably a film I won't be seeing.
Our film recommendation of the week, something Chip will never, ever see.
There is a population that really, really will resonate. This will resonate with, and I'm probably not one of them.
And I am, because, there you go. As a person in my middle age that I am, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was kind of an important part of my childhood. The first cartoon came out in 1987. I remember vividly waiting for, in anticipation of this five-part miniseries that came out at Christmas time 1987. It was a really important thing. They had a theme song. I wish shows had theme songs anymore.
They don't do that. It's too important. You got to get that advertising. That
extra 30 seconds of advertising is worth not having a memorable theme song.
And also not having you switch the channel during that theme song. That's go ahead and go right into that story.
We have game shows based on old TV theme songs. You can play a game where you try to remember what the theme song was for that program.
Well, theme songs are, they were very enjoyable. In fact, there was a gentleman named Richard Cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with Richard Cheese?
I am familiar with Richard Cheese.
Well, he has a whole CD where he does nothing but sing theme songs. In a lounge.
Way. In a lounge style. And people like that. People like the idea of having a theme song. Music is such an important part of our lives. Putting it as a part of a sitcom was very important in the beginning.
Well, singing Gilligan's Island, mm-hmm. I Dream of Jeannie.
The Love Boat.
Bewitched.
Mm-hmm.
Brady Bunch.
All of these. You can make Three's a whole Company. Album just out of those things. Absolutely. Come and knock on our door. Absolutely. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had a very catchy theme song. The kids of the 1980s loved that, and we went out and bought as many plastic figures as we possibly could. And now, 30 years later,
sure,
my children probably will be the same audience for that I was 30 years ago.
Well, you can tell a number of things about this movie. One, it looks like they put a lot of care and a lot of resources behind it.
As opposed to the original 1990 movie, where they had the Jim Henson, they were Jim Henson costumes.
Okay.
Jim had an off day that day, I think.
Oh, I'm sure he didn't. I'm sure they did their best they could within the budget they were given.
Once again, we've talked about this so many times with other movies. The technology has changed so much. There's so many new, cheap, easy ways to make imagery on film.
And you can pretty much do anything now with a film. So, I you know, you never, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were very, very hot, very, very quick. And if we think of that the time that somebody said, let's make a movie, Jim Henson put together the characters, and, you know, next week we're going to be filming. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could have been something that simple also. They did go out and get Vanilla Ice, which obviously made it too legit to quit.
Absolutely. Talk about the hot characters of 1987. I'm sorry. 1990 is when the movie came out. But yeah, Vanilla Ice was right there on the top.
He was probably about as hot of an artist as you could imagine. So at that time, he only had a single song that I'm aware of. Maybe he had a couple more.
He had an album of of songs, but it was a one-hit wonder kind of a situation. It really was that one song, maybe two. There might be two.
But the attempt was to take his popularity, and it would be the equivalent of grabbing Justin Bieber a couple years ago mm-hmm. and saying, all right, Justin, you're going to do this right now. Which immediately reminds me of Michael Jackson with his picture with E.T.
Music and movies go together very carefully. And we, as the audience, we want that music. The music is very important. We were discussing earlier how the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack is the number one album in the country right now.
It is a hot soundtrack. And it's all music from the 70s. In fact, it reminds me a lot of the Dazed and Confused CD from a few years ago from that movie. It obviously reminds me a lot of, from the 80s, all the John Hughes films where they have the soundtracks.
Music was vital to John Hughes.
But there's a lot of humor that's brought by knowing these songs. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, so check that one out.
Let's not spoil that movie. Let's spoil the Ninja Turtles. Hopefully they're making lots and lots of money.
So I'll tell you what I know about the Ninja Turtles. I remember that they had a comic book that came out.
Good. 1984.
Okay, so that was Eastman, and I think his name was Laird, L-A-I-R-D.
Okay.
All right, so I remember... Laird. It was based on, at the time, Grim and Gritty was starting to come in, a little noir. If you've seen Sin City, which is a movie that's coming out next week.
August 22nd.
Okay, and then there's the old Sin City. Mm-hmm. There's a guy named Frank Miller who created this way of storytelling that was very cinematic, maybe it would be a good way of describing it. And the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were definitely part, were kind of jumping off on that this was a way of telling stories. They made them as sort of a joke because at the time everybody had these samurai swords. They were all ninjas.
Everybody was a ninja.
Oh, it just turned out that was the hot character of the time. Mm-hmm. And he had limited run. They kept reprinting this thing. I never read it. I never picked it up. I knew it was there, and I knew it was hot, but it was not anything that really
was off your radar.
Well, it just didn't resonate with me.
Right.
But that didn't mean I wasn't aware of it. Somebody obviously recognized how hot this property was, went out, created, you know, maybe they had toys, and then they had this miniseries of cartoons. Mm-hmm. And at that time, maybe the mid-80s, was when they really were testing out. Before the 1980s, cartoons were on Saturday morning. They were on a window, maybe a three hours. Maybe I was on the East Coast, so from, you know, maybe 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning till noon. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little earlier for you guys here in the Central Time.
Yeah, we had to get up a little earlier to catch those early morning, Saturday morning cartoons. And that was a big part of childhood.
And those were the new cartoons of the time. Mm-hmm. They definitely were made for children. And if you remember the Super Friends, they were never a true bad guy in the Super
That's
Friends.
Right.
There was misunderstandings.
Right. Right.
And that was part of there was an effort there to ensure that, you know, we didn't have real evil. We always had them, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to throw that chemical in the, you know, whatever, in the river.
That's right. The Wonder Twins got it out.
That was a misunderstanding. But the Ninja Turtles, along with He-Man, mm-hmm. Maybe G.I. Joe.
He-Man and G.I. Joe were more of the after-school cartoon lineup. They were correct. Less of the Saturday morning part.
Oh, I kind of jumped ahead then. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, eventually they went to these events after school. They Monday through Friday, it would only show for maybe a week or two at a time. Transformers, G.I. Joe, He-Man. These were a step up from what the Saturday morning cartoons were. The technology had changed a little bit. They had shadows. They had better looking explosions. They actually had a bad guy in these. Mm-hmm. So And then from there, they went to where they were like every day after school.
And now, kids, now my kids have all these channels on cable. They have a cartoon channel. They know that they can tune that in anytime, 24 hours a day, and they have multiple cartoon channels.
And you'll have, was it a Cartoon Network? You would have one. You have Disney has cartoons.
Right? Nickelodeon has a whole batch of shows that they love to watch.
How about Boomerang?
Boomerang is a Cartoon Network.
Those are reruns, though.
Those are those old Hanna-Barbera's that we grew up with. All of the Super Friends and...
The Olympics.
And the wacky races, absolutely.
Take all the characters that we've already created in all the cells.
Right.
And we'll have an Olympics.
Well, there you go. The Battle of the Network Stars, just cartoon style.
Correct.
That's good stuff. I wish they brought back Battle of the Network Stars. Wouldn't you love to see some of those millionaires racing in really... awful tight shorts.
Oh, that's right. John Stamos. It's in mixed martial arts against Gopher.
He's a senator, isn't he?
He is.
He's a senator. He's important. Don't mess with Gopher. I think that was his ad campaign. It was don't mess with Gopher.
Don't you mess with Gopher. You'll get it done. Well, these characters obviously grew very, very quickly, became an incredibly hot property. They had cartoons, they had comics, they had lots of toys. And we cannot underestimate how much this drove the toy business. Mm-hmm. In fact, it drove the toy business on such a massive level that Marvel ended up buying Toy Biz, or Toy Biz bought Marvel, one or the other.
I don't remember which.
It doesn't matter. But anyway, it was all about just what can we do to sell more plastic?
Mm-hmm.
And they did.
Hasbro still owns G.I. Joe and Transformers. The G.I. Joe and Transformers movie, the first word you'll see when the screen turns on is Hasbro Presents.
And if we think of G.I. Joe, the action figure, the original one was maybe 12 inches tall.
Mm-hmm, correct.
And he was one character. There may have been a black guy and a white guy. That one may be blonde, and one may have red hair, and one may have black hair, but they were all the same character.
Right.
And they moved that when they created now we've got 100 different characters.
A cast of characters to make a cartoon story.
To sell more plastic.
And to sell more plastic, because boy, were those collectible.
They were. They were very hot. In fact, they were trying to... compete with, say, the Star Wars figurines at the time.
And Star Wars was one of the products that changed the industry, both the film industry and the toy industry.
Well, when they sold the box, they could not produce them fast enough. Star Wars sold empty boxes that you could redeem for those characters 6 months after Christmas.
Wow.
That is probably the most genius way. Somebody said, we can't get all these out in time.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do? Sell empty boxes.
Brilliant.
Promise them later.
Yeah.
Oh, it's incredible. But Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, once again, didn't resonate with me. It was a little beyond my time, but I was aware of it. I recognized sort of what it did for young people. And when I say young people, we should talk about teenagers and kids that are 3, 4, 5 years of age. T-shirts. Whatever you could put a Ninja Turtle on, they did it.
Bart Simpson famously is known for saying, "Cowabunga." And Matt Groening said...
Oh, wow. That's right.
...that Bart Simpson wasn't saying "Cowabunga" because he wanted to say it. It was because he was a fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, that is incredible.
Isn't that something?
It is. It is. And maybe one day we'll talk about how The Simpsons have influenced so many other things.
Ah, it's only been on for 25 years. It's a fad.
Oh, it's a...
Don't worry about it. There's so many people that I have that conversation with. We'll talk about that one day.
All right. So we have our characters. Our characters are named after these artists.
That's right.
If you asked a kid to name 4 artists, they could not do it. But if you asked a kid to name the Ninja Turtles, they're all there.
Right.
So teachers, when you're asking about artists, always ask about. Please just name Ninja Turtles.
That's right. And there's that joke in the Lego movie where the Lego Michelangelo is standing next to the Lego Michelangelo, and they are called off on the roll right next to each other. That's good stuff. Excellent work.
Oh, good stuff.
Speaking of good stuff, we get on to our appetite of the week. This week, we've chosen Google Voice as our app of the week because we both use Google Voice. We've used it for a very long time, and it's changed everything about phone communication and texting communication. In the beginning, when I first got my Google Voice number, I was using that on all correspondence. Every time I printed out a new business card or the signature on my email, that was my phone number, and it was connected to any phone that I wanted to add to it later. Very useful. Mm-hmm. Still just as useful. I've moved away from Google Voice a little bit in the last few years now that Verizon packages texting with my phone plan, and I can't not pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no choice. I have to pay for it, so I might as well use the texting plan that comes with. But I still receive quite a few texts from people through that Google Voice number.
Well, I use Google Voice quite a bit. In fact, I try to use, if I'm going to text someone, I try to text them through Google Voice. I'm a small business owner, and the Google Voice number I use was because I am out. I'm out quite a bit. If someone calls that number, it calls my office, and it calls my cell phone at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very, very useful. I there's no reason for a client to have 20 different numbers. Well, if I can't reach them here, I'll call a different number.
Right.
If they call this one number and they can get in touch with me, great.
Regardless of where you are, because it just finds you, because it knows to contact you through those various routes.
And if you ever had to have another number, say another cell phone or something of that nature, and don't worry, there are times when all of a sudden you get a new number, then you don't have to update your group.
You never have to tell anybody about the new number.
Because you just have it forwarded to that new number.
Now, the challenge in that is you will always have to call people from your Google Voice number. That's an extra button or two.
I don't do that, but okay. I guess you could.
But you could if you wanted everybody to be, if you wanted your Google Voice number to represent your business, you could call them from that number.
You could.
You can text them from that number.
You can. I do not text. My industry does not allow written communications of that nature.
Okay.
But what it would allow you to do is when my wife, I'm out and somehow we need groceries, she could text me at that number, just like you would normally text. But she has a choice of numbers. But if she texts the Google Voice, I actually have a list of all those voices. A lot of the innovations Google Voice had or created are starting to become available.
Mm-hmm.
For my office number, I have AT&T. I have a traditional landline. And that's because if power goes down or something of that nature, I want to have a number that can be reached. So, you know, when the tornado comes and takes my house away, I can at least make that phone call and say, yeah, I'm out of the office.
Right. One of the things that was so innovative about Google Voice is when you receive a voicemail, it will transcribe that and send you a text.
And that's what I was getting to. AT&T has adopted that. On my iPhone, I have an icon.
Mm-hmm.
I press that, and now AT&T transcribes all my messages, voicemails. Also allows you to keep them as an email. The challenge, what we're dealing with right here, is that when we say who owns, you know, Google obviously owns everything.
So let me ask you this. Let's see if you can do
that. If I had my choice between using the phone company or using Google Voice fits over it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can use any company underneath it.
Right. Why do you think Google was transcribing voices? Think about what Google has been doing with the voice in the last few years.
I know the answer to this.
I think you do.
And I'm going to see if I can remember it. They were listening to these messages.
Yes, they were.
They were not listening to the message to get into your private details.
No.
They were listening for accents.
That's right.
How you pronounce words. Because eventually,
Google Voice Search. Those of you who have used Google Voice Search in the last 6 to 9 months, it is absolutely fantastic. It's better than Siri. It's better than anything else that I've used in terms of understanding my voice and anybody else's voice that I put in front of it.
Google Voice compared to Siri is, I'm sorry, Google Search with Voice compared to Siri is, they're so far ahead. You can, what I end up doing is I'll search through Siri at times and I'll say something and I will get some garbled, whatever it is. And what it is they're looking for something. If I go to Google Voice, I'm asking the same question. The chances of me getting to what I'm looking for go up exponentially.
And as a person who carries a Android tablet and a Apple iPhone, I can use both of those systems in ways that are amazing. The Google Voice search on the Android tablet, fantastic. I use that more often than anything for searching Google. The iOS voice to text is pretty good. Everything's improving about it.
Sure. And let me make sure I'm very clear. Both of these services are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where we were 5 years ago to where we are today, I mean, we are one day going to truly be able to interact with one of these services.
Jarvis, I think this suit is crashing again. Yes, sir. I think you're right. Goodbye.
That was Iron Man. He was Iron Man.
Oh, and now my dramatic reading of Iron Man.
But that's true. We are going to be able to interact with around your house.
Everything. The Internet of Things and the voice capacity of things are intersecting. And they're going to intersect in a wonderful way where you are going to have microphones on so many devices and cameras everywhere and will be so secure because
everyone will be able to see you.
Wait, I think that we've made a wrong turn here. I think I've read this book and I don't think it comes out good.
Mr. Fodor, have you done your push-ups today?
Yeah. The insurance company's here. They'd like to talk to you about your BMI.
That's right. Oh, that's from 1984. That's the scary part. But the nice part is that if they figure out a way where you can enclose the system, where it does not leave, where it maybe can draw from outside, but does not leave your premise.
And all that security stuff is
it's
things that we have to think about.
They're in the infant stage.
And
the people who are working on it are definitely thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So they know when to deliver the pizza.
Right. When the automatic in the car signals to the house and to the Pizza Hut that you are within 4 miles, deploy the drone. He's almost there. He needs pepperoni.
We've determined your sustenance is down. We've added an additional salad.
Right. Your nutrition level requires more salad.
Normally we would have ordered the extra large, but we will be giving you the small with extra salad.
Well, when your MyFitnessPal tells them that your calories are done for the day, they say, oh, sorry.
We have given you this bag of air.
Right.
Breathe it.
Your insurance company says you can't have the pizza.
Well, I enjoy Google Voice. You can text from it. I'm assuming you may be able to email from it. When you log in, I go in through my computer.
Okay.
I go through a Windows computer.
Mm-hmm.
I go through my iPad, my iPhone. I go through my Mac with it. It sits in the corner of Chrome. The weakness I have sometimes is, for some reason, for my Windows computer, it does not allow me to talk through it. You know, the phone will ring through Google Voice.
Right.
On your computer. If I answer it, there's not a connection.
Well,
there.
Then I've got good news for you.
The
solution to that is coming very, very soon, where Google Voice is going to cease to be. They're going to roll it in one day, very soon, into Google Hangouts.
Okay.
And Google Hangouts will then be your utility for all of that communication, whether it be a voice call, a video call, a text message, or an instant message, as it is now with Hangouts.
Well, that sounds awesome, because it, what it will ultimately become is the Star Trek communicator.
Yeah.
We don't flip phones anymore, but you basically flip your phone on, and you are talking through it just like you would do a communicator. Beam me up, Scotty.
And again, with microphones in every object in your house, you are literally going to be able to walk through your house and say out loud the command that you want to happen, and it will happen.
Don't say anything. Back up slowly. Shh, I didn't say anything. Go outside.
Right. Your whole house is bugged.
We'll talk out there.
Let's go down in the basement with the water heater. All right. Hey, Tony, looks like your water heater is about to spring a leak.
We're going to the baseball field, out in the middle of it, whisper at that point.
That's right. Surveillance is important, I tell you. That brings us to our book it for the week. Our book of the week is absolutely my favorite book from last year. It is maybe my top five books of all time. It is
Gone Demon. With the Wind.
That's right.
No, it was Demon.
It is Demon by Daniel Suarez.
Oh,
Demon,
yes.
Demon, spelled, of course, the computer way, D-A-E-M-O-N, Demon by Daniel Suarez. This book is... Daniel Suarez is quite possibly my favorite living author.
Okay.
He is, in my opinion, the Stephen King of tech thrillers. He can write a story that involves technology killing you, and I can't stop reading his stuff. He's so brilliant with the way he puts things together. The story of Demon, very simply, is the story of a millionaire, genius, computer magnate. Mm-hmm. Think of Steve Jobs, probably.
Mark Cuban.
More smart than Mark Cuban. Cuban's a figurehead, I think. I think there's a lot of smart people under Mark Cuban.
Okay.
But we all agree that Steve Jobs created a lot of things.
Sure.
Okay, Steve Wozniak created a lot of things, and Steve Jobs sold them. But Steve Jobs had a knack for finding
talent and pushing talent.
Absolutely. So somebody like that in this book is dying. He's dying of cancer. He knows that he's dying. And one day he dies. This is chapter one, by the way. I'm not spoiling anything. And the moment he dies, he has computers that are reading the news, as we all have easy access to.
Sure.
Google can read the news for you and send you an email whenever a certain keyword crosses the wire. He has it set up so that when the word that he has died crosses the wire, that triggers a series of programs around the world that kill a guy.
Well, that sounds great.
And the main character of the
story... This is a story. This is not true life.
No, but it could be.
Sure.
The simple little steps that Daniel Suarez wrote in this book could all be done today.
Okay.
Every little thing that he wrote in there that result in this man being electrocuted because his ID badge touched the scanner in the doorway could all be done.
Really?
Absolutely. And it's stunning how well he put it all together. Okay. The main character in the story is the investigator, so it's a detective story.
Okay.
Where the investigator is trying to find out how did this man die, and as he combs through, he finds all of this information from this genius computer person who set this all up.
I'm thinking about it in a different way. I'm thinking, all right, so now you found him. How in the world would you prosecute a dead guy?
Precisely. They have to stop his other programs. They're not prosecuting the dead guy. He's dead. He has nothing to lose.
Sure.
But he has so many other things set up that are ready to kill other people on his list.
All right.
It's
that sounds amazing. It sounds fascinating.
And one of the more fascinating facets of it as the book progresses is one of the things that he has set up is, well, it's Bitcoin.
Oh, really?
He created Bitcoin. Daniel Suarez, the author of this book, invented a currency that only certain people in this book have access to.
Okay.
The people who are in league with the Demon, and that currency becomes more and more useful as the novel progresses. And at the same time, we are seeing the U.S. dollar decline with that increase. Interesting. So that's where Daniel Suarez saw what was happening with Bitcoin.
Very interesting.
A digital currency and how it could take over the world.
Well, you've got me interested.
I got you. When I talk about finances, I got you. You have to read it. I'll get you a copy. It is quite possibly...
Is it a long read? Is it?
It's quick.
Okay.
It's a long book. There's a lot to it. I didn't spoil anything.
It absolutely... What amazes me is not the creativity. The creativity, there are a lot of creative people. But to map out a story and make it... To say, okay, if we create this type of event, how do we get back to this? I mean, the whole creative writing process fascinates me and scares me too. Because, you know, you don't have to know how everything's done, but if you know enough about it, the idea is to take someone, make it believable enough, and then have you kind of jump in their world and kind of follow.
Interesting enough that you want to keep following it as you go through the storyline.
Sure.
Absolutely. Authors are amazing. I agree. We get to our news segment. And now the news this week, Iliad, which is a French company.
The French.
Insert French pronunciation here.
Exactly.
Iliad has made a $15 billion offer for a majority stake in T-Mobile.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating because we're seeing big companies trying to break into the U.S. market. We just had Sprint bought by
SoftBank,
which is a Japanese company.
Japanese.
They're the second or third largest cell phone carrier in Japan, but they got very hot through their advertising and things of that nature. Sprint has adopted the same sort of approach here. It's going to be very interesting to see what T-Mobile can get from this this French company.
Yeah, I pull for the underdog a lot when it comes to cell phone service. I think a lot of people hate the bill. They love the service when it works. They hate it when it doesn't, obviously. But they hate the bill. That T-Mobile is trying so hard to be the uncarrier. They're doing so many things, giving away bandwidth. You can get 150 megabytes of bandwidth for your tablet for free from Sprint. From T-Mobile.
Really?
Uh-huh. They are the uncarrier. They want so badly to break that mold where people are opening that envelope and seeing $300 and $400 bills from Verizon and AT&T.
So, ultimately, I think what they're asking is for you to buy your phone, buy your tablet, whatever you're going to buy, you purchase it, and we will run the network for it. And because we're not financing it, they're hoping to be able to drive price down, which, by the way, is exactly how capitalism is supposed to work.
That's exactly how it's. And the competition between those carriers is certainly a big part of it as well. As we all know, buying an Apple iPhone costs $650. And it costs $650 to AT&T, it costs $650 to Verizon, and Apple says, you will sell this phone. We're going to sell it to you for $650.
Sure.
Thank you. And you have to sell it for $199. That's the structure. You are going to lose $450, but you're going to make up that money in fees monthly for the next 2 years.
Well, and in fact, it sets a bad precedent, because once you've purchased that phone after the 2 year period, you immediately have to upgrade. Until recently, you were paying the same price. Now they've just in the last few months, I think they've introduced something that you.
They fooled you, Chip.
They did.
They did fool you. You are paying the same price. You can pay them first, or you can pay them last, but either way, you're paying the same price.
I made the mistake of when I had my iPhone 3G, 3GS, of running, I think, an extra year and a half without upgrading phones. And technology changes quickly.
It does.
And what ends up happening is I thought I was doing the right thing.
I thought you were saving money.
Well, not necessarily saving, but, you know, when
not spending $199.
When you buy a television, you don't like, well, you know, it's 2 years old, I need to replace it.
Right.
You want to kind of run it through its course, and if you're lucky, you've got a 20-year-old television, you know, if you're lucky. With cell phones, they're not saying, it really is set up, here, after your 2 years, get rid of it, mm-hmm. get a new one, start over.
And the smartest people after 2 years will pick up the free version, not the $200 version, and save that money. I, on the other hand, not being in the smart category, will pick up the $200 version about, I'm going to go with about 17 months after I picked up the last one. I don't look
so,
at me like
so
that.
So is the iPhone 6 right there?
The iPhone 6 will be in this house soon enough. I'll tell you that much. My 12-year-old and my 8-year-old, they are ready for my iPhone 5S. They will be happy to acknowledge it. They'll bow to me when I buy the new phone, and they'll run off, and I won't see them again.
Thanks, Dad. Thanks, Dad.
Thanks, Dad.
Well, this T-Mobile movement, many of these companies, T-Mobile and Sprint particularly, their service depends upon your area. Now, mm-hmm. now that's the same thing with Verizon and with Sprint and with all the discount carriers out there. But typically when you're dealing with Verizon or with Sprint, you do get a little more coverage.
They globally do have a better coverage than the other carriers, yes.
But if you're in a pocket with T-Mobile or a pocket with Sprint, you could be the lucky town that it's great. And these things kind of work out for you mm-hmm. because these companies are definitely playing with price, and that can only benefit you.
Competition. Competition absolutely brings prices down and makes companies do better things for their customers.
And the hope is that if an outside purchaser comes in, is that they will expand, because nothing would please me more than having T-Mobile with great service. Better service mm-hmm. than Verizon. When I say service, I'm not talking about being nice.
Coverage.
Mm-hmm. Or having Sprint having the best coverage in the planet. Mm-hmm. It only helps Verizon to improve, only helps AT&T to improve, and we're the regular people, we only improve, we only get better coverage through that competition.
That's right.
Good stuff.
I agree. All right, I think that's about enough from us for the day. I think you can go on with your day after you listen to this and know all the information that you need to survive another week.
Oh my goodness, thank goodness. I was afraid we weren't going to survive.
That's right.
But if they come back next week, can they survive again?
Every week.
Oh, yes.
You'll have to come back every week so that you'll have all the right information. If you want to contact us, we can get to us at our website, TooMuchScrolling.com. We have a Gmail address, TooMuchScrolling, our Twitter account, Instagram, Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Sprecher, which I still don't know quite what that is.
Sprecher.
But it's out there. It must be German. Is that a German?
It sounds like Sprechen.
Sprechen. It's about speech. That's all I know about it. Until next week, I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Essenflow.
We'll see you in the future.